Hi, and welcome to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we talk with patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals and do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Steve Kelly is a professor, public speaker, grandfather, and avid biker, among other things. But he is also living with central nervous system lymphoma, a rare cancer that his doctors told him is incurable and inoperable. After being unable to find peers facing a similar diagnosis, Kelly decided to share his story in the book, Cancer RIP, The Ultimate Fight. In this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast, Kelly opens up about his cancer journey and offers others advice on how to get through life after receiving such a shattering diagnosis.
Well, I'd love to just dive in to get to know more about you. I'd love for you to tell me more about your diagnosis and your cancer journey so that I can get to know more about that.
So I was diagnosed in June of 2018, and that came about because I started to get lost, and it was only a short distance from my office. It's only roughly 6 miles, and I ended up hitting a little island in the center of town, one of those little traffic islands. It's only about 6 inches high, but I bumped into it, and I had a pretty perfect driving record, believe it or not, at least that everyone knows about. But at any rate, when I hit the island, I, got out of my truck and scratched my head and looked around, walked around and said, what happened? Well, the tumor had just started to set in. So when I went to go home then, it was only 6 miles, and it took me 3 hours to get home. I couldn't remember how to get home. So I kept taking turns and coming to places that I didn't recognize. And yet I knew the whole area and just couldn't find it. So that the tumor had relatively quickly taken control and severed. I don't know if severed is the right term, but had stopped my ability, at least for memory. And especially with mapping, that was a very big thing. So memory and mapping were the first sort of pieces of a puzzle that became a tumor in my head, which turned out to be, by the way, CNS lymphoma, which stands for central nervous system lymphoma. And it's only 3 in a million get it, and very few survive. It's a very unusual cancer because it's a brain tumor that originates in the brain. It doesn't metastasize from anywhere. So it's kind of apparently difficult to get and difficult to diagnose. And most people are unlucky that they live in a place, let's say, that where it's not easy to recognize what's wrong, and then they don't get treatment. But I live a roughly 30 minutes drive, 35 maybe, to Boston, where Dana-Farber Hospital is. And in fact, my doctor there, Dr. Lakshmi Nayak, wrote the foreword to the book. So she was very, very complimentary toward me in terms of we get along well. And I'm a very fortunate person to have been able to be treated by someone who is considered to be one of the world's experts in CNS lymphoma.
So then from that moment that you started to get lost, you got in that small accident. How quickly did that kind of happen from that accident / when symptoms started to occur to actual diagnosis?
Probably took about 2 weeks because I sort of fought it. My personality is to not give in at all. So there's nothing wrong with me. I just have to figure out what went wrong. And, it just started to overwhelm me. I think the day that it really overwhelmed me was I went to get some soil for a garden. But I do remember very vividly that I couldn't find my way out of the store. It was really a scary, scary moment to not be able to find my way back to the entrance that I'd come in at a home goods type of store,
So then, of course, you ended up writing your book. So what was the inspiration behind writing your book?
I really want to help people. And when I was going through it, there's quite a difficulty finding someone else for me. I mean, only 3 in a million get this disease. So it wasn't like I could find someone else who'd been through it. And also with HIPAA regulations, I felt a little bit distanced. So I decided that I would write the book, and then people would be able to just read about what it was like to have a serious brain disease. I mean, it's glioblastoma is also very serious. This one is sort of parallel with that. CNS lymphoma is also a serious brain disease. So, and then the second part of why it sort of made sense too, is that I incorporated in the back of the book a whole section for the members of my family to write. So like my sister, my wife, my grandchildren, everybody, my sons, they got to write in the back of the book, like what it was like to experience it with me. And I think people will really enjoy reading that. They might even enjoy that more than my section, but it's a whole section devoted to the family's experience of cancer, piloting the regular life while someone else is going through the trauma too. But you're no less traumatized, I would suggest. And I tell people that one of the things I wrote in the book, I think, was that you have to adjust quickly. It really is important that you become a pragmatist almost immediately. And, you know, here's your new set of facts. And let's say that the cards are dealt, but the die isn't cast. It's sort of like you can make some changes, and positive attitude is really helpful for everyone around you and for you as well. So those things, I think, come through the book. And I tell some stories about, I try to make it quite humorous, if you can believe it or not, to get people to be able to laugh. At one point, I sent an email to my friends that said, "You are explicitly permitted to tell me jokes all the time," you know, something like that. So they would know that it's okay, we can make fun of it. So that was part of the book. And there's a few sections in there that'll have you giggling, I think.
What are some of the other biggest takeaways that you hope they will have from reading it?
I think to develop your team around you, and I had several teams. I had a medical team, a family team, a friend team, a bike team. I bike a lot, mountain bike in my group. And the recovery phase in particular with a brain tumor, at least mine, I shouldn't speak for more than mine, it's important that you start to build your neural pathways back. And that's a fancy word. I'm not a doctor, but I use it anyways. Mm-hmm. But the disconnects that occurred from the tumor growing and then displacing, I think, the neural pathways somehow, that those disconnects have to be, I think, can be built by almost stressing the way you do in learning. You stress yourself to learn new things, and then you start to develop more brain activity, more brain power. In particular, in my case, mountain biking, and you're just learning to look ahead and go around a corner and expect another root or a stone. And that really forced me at a fast pace to kind of like make my brain work. Whatever you can do to stay physically active, I think, is a big plus. So positive, physically active, and mentally pushing yourself. And if you can, I mean, some people are, you know, just that's not their situation. They're frustrated or they're not feeling great. And you might not be able to do that. But if you can do it, that's my thought.
You know, you kind of just answered one of my next questions about what would your advice be to someone who has been diagnosed with a rare cancer?
So even when I was in the hospital, I requested from day one a stationary bike in my room. The people, the nurses, were a little bit taken aback. And they said, "Are you sure?" I said, "I want a stationary bike. I want it right here." And so I had like 5 IV lines and chemotherapy and all kinds of things. I'd be on my bike and there'd be loops all around me. And I just would stay on for as long as I could. And part of the chemo was Thiotepa and rituximab and all the methotrexate, a whole bunch of drugs that are pretty well known, I think, once you're in the community. I had no idea before this. But, you know, as I got those drugs, I think their direction is to kill off all of your white blood cells. And then that is the thing that allows you to heal. But that's tied into the tumor. So they have to like depress your system and bring you down to almost zero. And I got down to 10 white blood cells, and you need 10,000. So they got me down to 10. And even at that point, I was still getting on the bike and just like, you know, slugging it out a little bit at a time, as long as I could. And then they made me stop at one point for about, I think, 2 or 3 days. But then I insisted on getting back on, and we did the stem cell transplant. And then that was the beginning of building back. So pretty interesting experience, but not fun. I lost all my fingernails, all my toenails, all my hair. And in the book, there's a great picture of me bald, by the way, which is fun to look at. My hair has gone back. So that's nice encouragement for anybody watching. So, and they also have great wigs and stuff. I have a friend that makes the wigs for people, and it's nice. Well, one of the things that was really difficult for me, and not for some people, was the MRI process. I didn't like those MRIs. I felt very claustrophobic in them. So I had to find a way to conquer that. And it was really not easy at all. I ended up walking away from treatment at one point. I just said, "No, I'm not doing any more of the MRIs." But my doctor, Dr. Lakshmi Nayak, she said to me at one point, "Steve, time is brain. And if you delay this, you're going to like let your brain go atrophy or fall apart." So I had to find a way to get through it. And we ended up using IV Ativan. And then eventually I wanted to not have to use IV Ativan to still get MRIs. And I need them quite regularly. I mean, at the beginning, it was every 2 weeks. And then slowly over like a year, we got to every 4 weeks. And now I think we're up to 4 months now. So you do need, at least in my case, I need a lot of MRIs, kind of check and make sure it is still what I'll call, nobody uses this phrase, but I'll use it, to keep it in a dormant state. You know, I think that the medical community has done a good job emphasizing with their funds, like how to treat it. And perhaps it was harder to split that money so that they could figure out what causes it. So they still don't know what causes that. I'll hope they would have someday so they would know, you know, why did I get this? Why was I one of the lucky three in that million? You know, but very all in all, just thrilled to have the Dana-Farber team working on my behalf and pulling me back from like edge of the earth almost, you know, where you're going to fall in. So it's an incurable, inoperable tumor. And the tumor resides in what's called the blood-brain barrier. Essentially, it's a sac inside your head, which contains the brain. And they really can't puncture it, right? They can't get at it where this tumor is. People have tumors that might even wrap their spine, which are even more difficult. But this one is why it's so unusual, right? Remember, only 3 in a million get it and very few survive it. But what they have done is they've designed specific chemicals that can penetrate the blood-brain barrier sac and then affect the tumor's size. They don't seem to be able to give me any prognosis, you know, so which is why I frame it as a dormant volcano. And, you know, you'd hope that eventually they would figure out, so what's causing it. They do have great new therapies, T-cell therapies coming out using your own cells. And then they devise a way to prevent the tumor from growing with your cells. So that I don't really know the whole part of that, but I think there's great things ahead.
What are some of the other key points, if any, that you think readers will learn about from your book?
For one thing, don't be deterred by anything, and not the MRIs, not the opinion of someone else who might like step on your toes. You have to have thick skin. Most people in my experience handled it well, but there were several people who surprised me in my life that they weren't ready to handle it. And, you know, that was a bit of a something hard to get used to. So I would say to you, if you're experiencing it, that we have enough trouble running our own lives. Let's let other people run theirs. You know, it's almost like another comparison would be like, I've missed a friend's parents' funeral. And clearly that would be because I didn't make time for it. So that was a choice I made. And I wouldn't want someone telling me, well, you should have made time, because I don't know why I didn't at that time, but I would have the same sort of grace that I would request, I would give to try with people who are not able to work with you going through cancer, to extend some grace. I think that will be a nice thing for someone to have in their tool bag, is just realize how important grace is for everyone in the process.
So is there anything that I didn't touch on already that you would like to add that might be important to mention in the piece?
Take care of your teams, you know, my medical team, my bike team, my family team, my friend team, you know, all of these teams that play a role in what you do. And I think that understanding too, that hope is really important, that you always create hope for everyone, including yourself. So I had taught leadership for, I think, 15 years. I have a 20-year teaching career at college. And I think one of the things about leadership is you have to create meaning. You got to be predisposed to action. You have to be a person of trust, and you also have to be about hope. So if you can try to do those four things, M-A-T-H, do the math, meaning, action, trust, and hope. You can do those things for the people in your life and for yourself. I think that will put you in like this great place that enables you to be, you know, couple that with grace, couple that with exercise. Now you're in a place that you can do the best you can with cancer. And I think you have to stop very short of being prescriptive about it, because someone could be depressed. Someone, you know, it jolts your self-view. And, you know, I was humming along in 2018. I had a business. My sons worked for me. And I had some life insurance. That was another thing, by the way. When you get the diagnosis, all of a sudden you're scrambling for like, what did you do for life insurance? Because you're not getting it once you get a brain cancer diagnosis. You're not getting any insurance. So I was figuring out like how deficient I had been. That was a bit of a shock, a bit of a no fun moment, was that I hadn't done as good a job as I would have hoped. So yeah, I think there's a lot for people to take in and handle. But if you can take care of your family and your medical team, and well, there is one more thing actually. So to try and go through this alone medically is crazy. My wife is particularly good at, she's a physician assistant, and being a patient advocate and having a patient advocate was critical. So I would suggest that anyone that can find themselves a patient advocate would have somebody that would go to the meetings with them, take notes. And now I remember the word thiotepa and Cytoxan and rituximab, but at the time, no, no memory. When I met with a doctor, I wouldn't remember what they were, what they did. So I think that'll help you as a patient, is to have somebody who you would call, like it could be a cousin that's a nurse, a sister, somebody that goes with you on those appointments and doesn't just sit there, but takes notes. Because with a brain cancer. Kind of funny because like if you, let's say you injure your ankle, left ankle, right? Well, your brain tells you, you know, let's walk a little heavy on the right so you don't have that feeling. But when your brain is injured, what tells you what to do? So you get very confused very easily with a brain tumor. And so that's why I would suggest that people, they really need help and to take the help and then honor the help and be gracious.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.